Joining us now from Hazeltine National, hosts of this year's and the 41st Ryder Cup, head golf professional Chandler Withington. Chandler, welcome into the golf shop.
Thank you so much. Glad to be with you.
Yeah, well, I'm glad we could get to you. How stressful has it been for you over the last 4 to 6 weeks or months or years?
Yeah, I wouldn't use the word stressful. I think the tournament directors and the event chairman might answer that question differently. But for me, I'm just doing my best to support everyone. I'm kind of along for the ride. So the heavy lifting doesn't really fall on me.
Well, I guess that's a good thing. But it is your place, and it's going to be your show. And the reflection will be on the work that you and, so, you know, to some extent, what your staff has done as well to prepare for it. I'm curious, as we look at this, hosting an international event, you know, up there in Chaska, Minnesota, how different is that than hosting, say, a PGA Tour event or even a U.S. Open?
There's so many ways that it's different. You know, first is it's only 24 players, you know, different than a field of 150 plus. So we're preparing for 24 players. So some things are smaller, but most things are bigger. You know, the infrastructure that's built on this property, 1.5 million square feet of temporary infrastructure has been built for this. So I think as we looked around for the last 2 weeks, as we're getting very close to completing all the construction, just the looks on people's faces when they show up on this property is an oh wow moment. And the Ryder Cup, each time it gets played in the United States, each 4 years, it just seems like it's growing exponentially. Everything is getting bigger. I was just in the Merchandise Pavilion last night, which has gotten 35% bigger than it was in Medina in 2012. So that, I think, is just the tone going in, is that the amount of players that are playing in this are smaller, but everything is so much bigger than we've ever been before. And it will never be this big again here.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose the folks who maybe last remember like Rich Beam's victory out there in a major, this is probably unrecognizable to the build out that was necessary for that major.
You're spot on. I think people just come in, they go, wow, this is, I mean, the PGA is about a quarter of the size of what this is. To kind of put it in perspective, so, you know, the locals are in for a treat. And we've been talking about this event for the last 4 years now, and it's now just about a week away, and everyone's getting so excited.
Well, and when it comes to entertaining an international audience, I mean, the Midwest and Minnesota is well known for having a pretty good population of people from, you know, Central and Eastern Europe. Do you see that there might be some U.S. fans who are there to cheer for the Euros?
That's hard to predict. You know, it's everyone's got their favorite players. I think what we do know is that when we distributed tickets in 2009, for the PGA Championship, about 75% of those went within the state of Minnesota. We know that over half of the ticket distribution for this one is from outside the state of Minnesota. So we know how many people are coming in from not only outside the state, but outside the country. And the European fans travel really well, and they're also very vocal. So that's what I think makes the Ryder Cup so interesting and unique and fun, is the mix of the two crowds. And everything in the Ryder Cup, the cheers are always louder, because in most weeks, a U.S. Open or a tour event or whatever it is, you might be rooting for one player, I'm rooting for a different player, and people are rooting for different players, so the roars are never in unison. But when it comes to Ryder Cup, we're all rooting for the United States, so it doesn't matter if you're a Zach Johnson fan or a Jordan Spieth fan or a Jimmy Walker fan. If they do something well for the United States, we're all going to cheer in unison.
So,
and I think the electricity level just goes up with that.
So when you look at this and how it's going to shape up, I mean, I love to think that cheering section, that enthusiasm will be a decidedly U.S. advantage. Now, the course itself, I mean, you know, you're talking about Robert Trent Jones and Reese Jones. It's a course that's sort of probably familiar, at least in its layout, to most of the European players. So I don't know if the track itself presents a home field advantage, but maybe you could disagree with that. But the fans definitely create a home field advantage. Are you sensing that as you begin to prepare?
Well, I'm definitely sensing the excitement, and locally, I think people are just so ready to go. And I think what people got to remember about the Midwest is, and I moved from the East Coast 4 years ago, so when I was on the East Coast, I mean, one of these big tournaments would roll through every one, two, or three years. If I were still in Philadelphia, I could have driven to Oakmont this year, and I could have gone right the road to Baltusrol. So sometimes I think being on the East Coast or sometimes on the West Coast, these events go through so much more often that I remember you just get a little jaded to it. But yeah, Here in the Midwest, they don't come through all that often. So when they do come through, I mean, all the people from the Dakotas and Wisconsin and Iowa are going to be up here for this. and they don't get to see something like this all that often. And we know it's the biggest golf event that's ever going to happen within this region. So with that, I think people are just so excited and can't wait to get going. And to your point, I think a home field or our home crowd can propel a match. You know, in a close match, it can make the difference, and it can get the best out of the home team players for sure.
Well, and hopefully we see a lot of that. I'm a big homer when it comes to the Ryder Cup, and I've been so disappointed with recent results, and I'm not sure that this, and we can talk about it in a little while, I'm not sure the task force has made that big a difference. But specifically to Hazeltine, I'm looking at your scorecard. And match play is different. I mean, we had Rich Beam on, and it's a different animal. But where on the course do you think we can see players score well, and where might we see some carnage? I tend to be the guy on the show who asks about carnage. I like to know where the carnage is going to happen.
Sure, yeah, there will be carnage. I'll talk about that in a second. I think the scoring, our par threes, I was making this comment to Davis the other day, that our four par threes have played within the toughest eight holes the last two times the PGA Championship has been played. So our par threes play tough. I think you can score on the par fours. And then the par fives are going to be interesting. I was quick to point out that we lost the last Ryder Cup at Glen Eagles because of par five scoring. And everyone kind of makes, you know, the point that, well, no, we lost it on foursome scoring, which is alternate shot, because we lost 7 points to one in alternate shot. But it really wasn't that we just played poorly in alternate shot. We played poorly on par fives in alternate shot. Now, we've got three par fives that could potentially play over 600 yards. And I was watching the guys play in the last few days. They're hard to get to. With the right wind, you can get to them. And the longest players can get to them. But more than likely, you're going to have to hit a shot from 75 to 150 to score on those holes. Now, the United States team, the good news is that we're really good players from 75 to 150. If you go up and down the list, we have some really good wedge players on our team. A Jordan Spieth, a Patrick Reed, a Zach Johnson, Phil Mickelson, even Dustin Johnson, Jimmy Walker, really good wedge players. Dustin's put a lot of time into his wedge play. And then, of course, we added Kuchar and Ricky Fowler and JB and one more to potentially be named. But if you look at where we score really well, it seems to be from 75 to 150. So can we take advantage of par fives better than we did at Glen Eagles? The par fives at Glen Eagles were numbers 2, 16, and 18 were all right around 510 yards. Which played right into the advantage of an alternate shot team like a Rory McIlroy and Sergio Garcia, mm-hmm. or a Martin Keimer and Justin Rose, for example, versus we were missing Dustin Johnson 2 years ago, which was a big loss. We didn't have an overly long team, so we didn't play long par fours or short par fives very well. But Hazeltine sets up differently, so I'm curious to see how we score the par fives. The carnage is going to be down the stretch. It's going to be on holes 16 and 17, 16 being a par five that's reachable in two, but water directly in front of the green. And then the toughest hole, I think, in a match is going to be the 17th, which is a par three, about 185 yards, over water. You know, somebody's going to flinch in that situation and get wet. And I'm curious to see who it's going to be first.
Well, yeah, and once they get over the water in most cases, I mean, you guys, I'm assuming you had a nice, long, snowy winter. Those greens got to get real, real healthy under the snow and come back in the spring. You know, I'm looking at the teams, and it looks like we have an advantage in putting statistics, which is not always the case, but seems to be what could separate the winners from the losers in this one. How would you categorize the condition of the greens?
Greens are absolutely immaculate, you know, and that's a credit to our superintendent and his crew, Chris Chertabaugh and his crew. Just yesterday, we were playing some practice rounds. They were running 13.5, and the players were loving it. And the players were to echo that. They think that we have an advantage on fast greens. Glen Eagles greens were only rolling between 10 to 11, and in pressure situations, that allows the Europeans to play less break, just charge the hole. We think we have a decided advantage if the greens are running fast. Conditions, you got to look at their lineup. There are a lot of players in their lineup that don't play a lot in the United States, like an Andy Sullivan or a Matt Fitzpatrick or a Chris Wood. You know, some of the rookies, they have a lot of their, they only have one player playing in the Tour Championship this week, which is Rory McIlroy. So we're curious to see how they adapt to fast greens. And then also, if we run the rough up around the greens, you know, do we have an advantage shifting around the greens? But regardless, we can talk a lot about potential advantages on paper and who's better on paper and stats. And we're having a lot of those conversations, but as we've seen in Ryder Cup's past, present, and future, It's when the gun goes off, who can handle their nerves the best? It doesn't matter how well you put it on fast greens over the year. You know, when you're under the gun in a match and it's the 16th hole and you're all square and you've got a 10-footer down the hill, who's going to control their nerves? And that's the X factor, and we'll see how it plays out here in a little bit.
Yeah, and I mean, as you look at the two teams, you've got the Euro team right now with six rookies, and the American team right now only has one with Brooks Koepka. Now that could change. Does that, when you're talking about handling the pressure, do you think that comes into play?
I don't think it does at all. I mean, the last time the United States team won a Ryder Cup, they had six rookies. Let's not forget that, 2008. So rookies are no longer rookies. 2 years ago, our three rookies were some of our best players, and Jordan Spieth, Patrick Reed, and Jimmy Walker. So rookies, you look at their records over the last many Ryder Cups, they're not afraid of the big stage. And I was actually pointing out something to somebody the other day about rookies and how the mindset changed. I don't know if anybody saw the interview that Curtis Strange had with Tiger Woods from 20 years ago when Tiger was playing in his first tour event. It was airing a few weeks ago because it was the 20th anniversary of Tiger on tour. Mm-hmm. And Curtis Strange was asking Tiger, he had just played his first round as a pro in Milwaukee. I think he shot maybe 70 or 69. And Curtis said, "What do you expect for this week, Tiger?" And Tiger, you know, without even hesitating, said, "Well, I hope to put together four good rounds and a victory at the end of the week would be nice." And this is his first pro tour event.
Right.
And Curtis Strange is going, "A victory." And Tiger's like, "Yep." And Curtis says, "How do you think that sounds to the rest of the guys who've been out here on tour and who've never won?" And Tiger's mindset, and he said, "When I play an event, I go there to win." And Curtis says, "You know, but second and third isn't too bad." And Tiger says, "Well, I always tell my dad, you know, second sucks and third's even worse." And Curtis says, "You know, but out here that's not bad at all." And Tiger says, "Well, I'm out here to win." And Curtis kind of laughs and says, "You'll learn." And, you know, of course, 20 years later, I mean, you look at how dumb Curtis Strange looks in that situation. But also in that situation, you look at guys like Curtis Strange or a Tom Lehman, or you could even put Davis Love in that category. They had to be out there a long time to learn how to win. No one really came out on tour back in the 80s, early 90s, and just started winning tour events. And Tiger won a major the next year by 12 shots. So what we've seen, and you got to remember, guys like Jordan Spieth and Rory McIlroy and a lot of these young guys on tour grew up watching a fearless Tiger. So in their minds, they're not thinking, "Well, I'm going to go into Ryder Cup and just crash and burn as a rookie."
Right.
They're thinking, you know, this is just like everything else, and we've seen so many rookies play well in recent Ryder Cups. So I think you throw all that right out the window. And I think, actually, from the American standpoint, the guys that have played in recent Ryder Cups, the experience that we have losing can almost be hurtful. It's how you use it as motivation or not. But there are a lot of guys with some scar tissue on the American team. So, you know, Jim Furyk has played in Ryder Cups since 97, you know, Phil's played in it since 95, but only been on two winning teams. So sometimes the harder you try in these situations to win, the more you get in your own way. You just have to kind of let it happen and not worry about the results so much. That's the hardest thing to do, but the rookies seem to be the better one to doing it.
Well, well said. And Chandler, we appreciate you coming on with us. We're excited about Hazeltine. We're excited about the Ryder Cup. We know you guys are going to put on a good show, and we're going to all be watching, as will the rest of the world. So I guess maybe I'll sound a little jingoistic when I let you go and I say, "Go USA."
Well, go USA. This is you know, what you said about earlier about being stressful. It's to us, we're excited, we're confident, and this is an opportunity for the United States to win on home turf for the first time since 2008. So that's the way we're going into this. So, you know, we're not overly stressed or anxious, but we're just ready to get going.
And it's going to be awesome. Well, thanks again for joining us. We'll talk soon.
Thanks so much.